Jewish home. I want to tell you a sentence or a paragraph, and I want to see if you guys see the humor in the following sentence or paragraph. A wife tells her husband, I keep telling you, and I've told you day in and day out, and now I have to tell you again to stop criticizing me. We have a challenge when it comes to criticism. We discussed that criticism is detrimental to marriage, and the question was posed, what does one do when one is criticized? Meaning a guy is... He drinks and then he burps out loud, and his wife says, that's not nice. So he says, and you shouldn't criticize. Right? Okay, now what? So where are we going with this? So certain things can be accomplished when people speak about it together. Meaning if a couple will discuss the idea that criticism is detrimental to marriage, then they can both strive to grow in that. And the question was asked, so what do you do when your spouse does criticize you? What I want to take it to a broader discussion of what do you do when things are really annoying in marriage? And there can be many instances like that. It could be about criticism, or it could be your wife asks you to take out the garbage, and then she asks you to change a diaper, and then she asks you to do the dishes, and you feel like you shouldn't make an issue of these little things, but you're pretty annoyed. The Rambam gives us a tool in his introduction to Pirkei Avot. He says a person should behave as though he has a trait, and then he will acquire the trait. That's very different than Western thinking. That means if someone got you annoyed, then try to smile and react calmly, and then with time, it will become natural for you to smile and react calmly. This takes practice, and initially it feels fake, but this is the way a person acquires a trait. You begin by faking it. So you come home, and you just bought the groceries, and guys, be prepared, this will happen in your home too. And your wife looks at it and says, you bought that detergent? Now for the next 2 months I'm going to use that detergent? Didn't I tell you last time that that detergent isn't good for us? And you're standing there. You just spent 3 hours, you know, the busiest time. You bought everything. You did everything she asked you, but you got one thing wrong. And you're seething. You're boiling. And the first thing you feel like saying is, and that's the best you can do about thank you? You know, you got nothing else to say? And then you say, I'm going to be a tzaddik, and you're silent, and you grit your teeth, and you think you've done great. And she's looking at you, and she's bawling at you out, and you're just quiet. No, you didn't do great. I mean, step one, you didn't do that bad, but what would happen if you'd smile and listen? What's so terrible? Let's play out the scene. You're going to say, look, I really don't think this is fair. I went, I stayed in line, I dealt with all the busy shopping carts, I dealt with that shopping cart that doesn't work, I slept with the kids so you'd have more free time, I got everything right, I got that wrong, okay, I got it wrong, why is that the only thing you can say? And she'll say, okay, Your Honor, what should I have said? And you'll say, excuse me, I didn't say Your Honor, I just said you could say thank you, you don't have to... And she says, okay, I'll try to be a better person next time, thank you, and leaves. Did you win? Did you lose? Did you accomplish anything? Very often what we say is a reflection of what we'd like to get off our chest. It's not necessarily what will produce something positive, even for ourselves. I'll give you a simple example. You walk through the door Matzei Shabbos. Okay? Let's take the reverse example. And your wife did one of those miracle things. You know, us husbands, we have miracles in our lives. We leave from Sudesh Lishit. We eat the final meal of Shabbat. And we leave the table a mess because we got to go daven. And somehow we come back and the table's clean. There are all kinds of miracles in our lives. We take off a dirty shirt, we put it in the hamper, and then somehow down the week it appears on the shelf all folded and clean. Miracles. You know, you finish the milk in the fridge, you go out to work, you come back home, there's milk in the fridge. Somehow, you know, there are these miracles that happen, and there's a miracle worker behind all of this. So you come back and it's Matzei Shabbos and the table's clean and set, and the dishes are clean from the sink. And your wife inadvertently didn't notice, but she took the rag that you used on Friday to clean the floor, she used that same rag to clear the floor Matzei Shabbos. Now she has a stuffed nose, so she didn't realize that the whole house stinks. You walk through the door and you start holding your nose, you look around, you wonder where's the stench coming from, and then you realize it's the house. The house stinks. What do you do? I challenge you, what do you do? Before, you know, we know very comfortably what happens when we come home with the groceries, we got one thing wrong, and then she says, why'd you get that detergent? And then I say, wait a second, but I got everything else right, I'm trying. But what happens when she got everything else right and she got one thing wrong? Where are we? How many people would be able to smile honestly and not say anything and not rewash the house? I know you're going to tell me, yeah, rewash the house. What's that telling her?
You need a little fresh air.
I need a little fresh air, right?
That's already.
Tell me, is it such a big deal? Now you can look at the scenario when you are not affected by it. You're impartial. It's not your wife. It's not your house. It's not you who's going to spend the rest of the night in the stench. Are you really capable of doing that? In all honesty, I think most people would not. They would say something or do something, but they would not sit there in the stench. Now your wife prepared a cup of tea and two cups of tea and you're dying to go out and get a breath of fresh air. And she's wondering what you want from her. Like, are you going to say something? How are we at this? You know, we have all kinds of expectations. And where are we? And what would happen if you made that fatal error of saying, do you smell something? She'd say, no, I don't smell anything. And then you'd say, well, I think maybe now you're going to try to be real sweet here, right? You're going to say, maybe you by mistake took the rag that I used on Friday. And she'll say, yeah, what's the big deal? And you'll say, do you mind if I just take 1 minute to wash down the house? And then fireworks. Female fireworks. Okay, she's not going to say anything. Now she's hurt. And enjoy your tea. You can have both cups of tea. And you're like, no, I want to have the tea with you. And she's like, fine, you can have the tea with me, right? You've destroyed the evening, but wait a second. Over what? Was it worth it? And how many times do we make those stupid mistakes? We say those little things. We notice when we get them, we don't notice when we give them. We're very good at noticing our own feelings. And I challenge you to think when you speak to your own parents, how many times we make these mistakes? How many times you come home and it's the orange juice with the pieces and you like the orange juice without the pieces and you're still like that 3-year-old who says, Ma, you got the orange juice they put the pieces in? Wait a second. For what? But again, we notice our feelings, they're very potent, and we don't notice how many times we trample on our spouse's feelings. How many times a woman will slave over making her favorite dish and we come home and say, I'm not hungry, honey, thank you. Boom, wait a second. So, when we speak about having patience, being able to smile and not make an issue over silly things, it helps if we can at least recognize that we do things that are not any less annoying, only we don't notice them. You know how annoying it is for a wife that her husband takes off his socks and puts it near the bed? What's the big deal to walk and put it in the hamper? You know, I was sitting with a couple, Holocaust survivors. They'd been married close to 70 years. And she was telling him, we have to write prenuptials. So it's not what you usually hear from a couple that's married 70 years. She says, look,
I got to tell you, I never know what you're going to do. If I die, you might go off doing something silly, marrying some young woman who's going to take all the money, and then our kids won't have anything. We got kids and grandchildren and great-grandchildren. I can't trust you. Me? Don't worry. Ain't no one else in the world I'm going to pick up their underwear from the floor. No one else. I'm not doing this for anyone else. Been doing it for you for 70 years. Not doing it for anyone else. You got nothing to worry about. But we got to do prenuptials. So I'm sitting there listening to this conversation. I guess the type of conversation only old people can have without being embarrassed. And I'm embarrassed. But it struck me. 70 years. And she says, I ain't doing this for anyone else. But you could see she's still annoyed she's doing it for him. But she's still doing it for him. How many things are we going to do for 70 years that she's not going to say anything, but it bothers her? And then we live with this mistaken notion that she got a great deal. Ask any husband, they'll tell you. Most husbands will tell you. She's so lucky to be married to me. I'm putting up with, but, you know, she's pretty lucky. We discussed last week or the week before the man's tendency to be very weak on appreciation. Going back to Adam Rishon, going back to the first man, where one of the great weaknesses we contend with throughout married life is a lack of appreciation for the person we're married to, for what they're doing. And the fact that we don't have enough appreciation weakens us. Because when I say something like, smile, so she did something that's annoying, smile. You start thinking, how can I smile? It's annoying. What do you mean? But how many things do we do that are annoying? Only we are more open and they are more closed. Chazal say when it comes to intimacy, the nature of man is he is tovea bapeh. Man is unabashed telling a woman what he'd like, whereas a woman is tovat balev. A woman desires things in her heart. So if a woman wants intimacy, she will find a roundabout way of indicating she wants him to pursue, she wants him to initiate, she wants him to show an interest. She might be dying for it, but she's going to do it in roundabout ways to get him aroused, to get him interested. The nature of a woman, Chazal say, is tovat balev. Her desires are in her heart, and she isn't as open in expressing them. She's much more modest, and I would even say more refined than the man. The man has no problem saying what he wants. No problem. We're very, you know, if we could get away without saying any words, go down to the lunchroom. Look, hand motions, you know. Why do I have to talk? In a man's world, very little conversation. It's funny. We were on a bus. I was with my son, and it was one of these frummy buses where they decided it's more orthodox for the men to be sitting in the front and the women in the back. I don't know where they got this from, but that's what they decided. So we're sitting in the bus. It's like early in the morning, and I'm sitting with my son, and we notice there's this barrier. The whole front of the bus is silent. The whole back of the bus is chirping away. You know, it's like you could tell a barrier where the conversation's going. But that's our nature, meaning men are different than women, and even though women will say a lot, but in this area, they won't say it. When they want something, they're going to try to indicate it. But they're not going to say it overtly. You guys know the story. I was walking out of a hall. There's a couple walking in front of me. The bus stops straight ahead. So there are two paths. There's the path straight ahead. And there's a sidewalk that goes the whole way around to the bus stop. She asks him, you want to go straight or around? And I'm standing right behind him. So he looks at the bus stop. He says, it's right there. We'll go straight. Yeah, she figured that out too, you know. But when she's asking him, she's indicating that maybe we should go that way. Maybe we'll have a nice long walk together. But us men, we don't get it. We're like, if she wanted it, why didn't she say it? But that's why we do all kinds of little things that really annoy them. They're not going to say it. And if you reach a point where she has to say it, she looks at you and says, do I have to beg? And you say, well, what do you mean beg? You can't just tell me what you want? No. Female language, tovat balev, it's her heart that desires and she wants you to understand. And us men, we don't understand. And every year I give this class, I get the same email from our female listeners, and they say, are you for real? Did those guys really not understand? Because in female language, this is so obvious. But in male language, if you wanted it, why didn't you say? You know? There's one last piece of chocolate.
So she says, do you want? So you say, yeah, thanks. Wait a second. No, okay, so you're decent. You say, do you want? She says, no, I asked you first. So you say, yeah, I want. What's about you? She says, you can have it. You know, it's not uncommon that a woman will tell her husband, you don't have to make me a cup of coffee. Oh, you want a cup of coffee? You know, how'd you know? Right? And for a woman, that's called spelling it out. So men walk around with this facade. Of course I'm perfect. She's never told me otherwise. She won't tell you otherwise. But believe me, for every little annoyance that she does to us, we do 10 to her. But they don't express it. So we don't hear it. So we have to at least be cognizant of the fact that they're putting up with us no different than we're putting up with them. And when things happen that are difficult or that we have to swallow, so we smile. And over time, the smile will become natural. Now, this wasn't the subject I planned on spending tonight on. This was just an introduction to deal with a question on a previous class someone emailed. So we'll try to address one more point. Mutual respect. You can't really build anything without mutual respect. It's very tempting to make jokes at someone's expense. Even when a person jokes about themselves, they don't necessarily want to hear you joking about it. Your wife tells you, you know, I've gained a few pounds. And you say, uh-huh. You're dead. Finished. Nothing to talk about. Forget supper for the next 3 weeks. You know, you'll say, but you said it. What do you say to that? Say, really?
You know, she wants her husband to be blind.
She doesn't want her husband to be blind. Right. So, okay, I guess we need to introduce it. This is really part of a broader class, but okay, I'll explain. It's just an example, but it's a whole class. It's chaval to just say two words and not finish the whole thought. So let's take a different example, but I'm just saying there's mutual respect means I'm sensitive to someone else and I'm not going to say things that can be offensive. And offensive means I'm going to gauge what's offensive to them. Now, us men, we're pretty bad at this. One of the mistakes we make is we make women jokes. So you're driving in the car, and the one in front of you can't decide which lane they're in. And they can't decide the speed they're driving at. And they're going this way and that way and slower and faster. And finally you can pass them. And you look and you see it's a woman. And you say, ah, female driver. Why? Wait a second, your wife's sitting right next to you. So I've been in a car where the two are... Oh, so the guy's driving and he says, must be a woman in front of us. And the wife says, huh? Must be a man. So finally they pass and he says, see, it was a woman. Right? Wait a second. Even if you think you're right, like everyone here thinks, but there's her feelings. Wait, why? And there are many things, you know, people consider it a Shabbos table. And they can discuss how long it takes to leave a simcha. People can sit and have a discussion about how long it takes women to prepare their hair or many other things. It might be funny as a bachelor. It's not fair as a husband. And you never know when you're crossing that line that you're starting to hurt someone's feelings. So if we really have mutual respect, we're going to be careful not to say something that could hurt someone's feelings. Especially if it's personal information. And this is where people really cross the line and make big mistakes. And that's respecting the spouse's family. Meaning we will learn that our spouse's family has their weaknesses. Or the way one rabbi put it to me when I was dating, He says, you notice when you enter a barn, it stinks, right? But when you live on the barn, you don't smell it. But what happens when you visit someone else's farm? You think their barn stinks. And then when they visit your barn, they say his barn stinks. Because everyone's accustomed to the stench of their own barn, and they're not accustomed to someone else's barn. He says, that's what happens when you get married. You come to your wife's family, and suddenly you notice either they're sticklers on time. If you walk in a minute late for lunch, everyone's looking at you. Or time doesn't matter to them. You say the bris is at 8 o'clock in the morning, and people don't show up till 10, and they expect you to wait for them. But the grandmother's on the way from Tzfat, but she hasn't left her house yet, and the moel is here, and it's 8 o'clock in the morning. Yeah, but how can you do it without the grandmother? And you look at them, and you think they're off the wall. You come from Switzerland. They come from Tzfat. Okay, now go argue. So it's an excellent, excellent material for jokes. Except that a woman has a tremendous affinity to her family. And a man does too. Even after a person gets married, there's a tremendous loyalty that's built in. And when a person puts their spouse in that position where they have a choice to laugh at the husband's joke and really turn their back on their family, or not, very, very often they're not going to laugh at the joke. Husbands take this very personally. They expect, we got engaged, your loyalty is with me, and forget them. And then they'll quote you the verses which say how a person leaves their family and forms their own family, and that's all very nice in theory. But in practice, part of respecting one's spouse is respecting their family. And not putting our spouse in a situation where they have to choose who they're going to be loyal to. And next week, Be'ezrat Hashem, we should discuss what happens when there's really conflict. Like what happens when her parents say, make the bris at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. And you say, sunset's at 5:40. If I say 5 o'clock, they're not going to show up till 7 o'clock and expect me to wait. I can't do that. And you want to do it one time, her family wants another time. How do you deal with that? So, Be'ezrat Hashem, next week we'll start with that.